Today's sponsor is author Cameron Clare. Her debut novel, Betting the Boss, is now available on Amazon, and she is a recent guest of the Writer Nation podcast. Find her on her website at CameronClare.com.
This is Writer Nation.
Welcome to the Writer Nation podcast. I am your host, Jenny Kate. Today's episode features the ever-lovable Jessica Snyder as she tells us her journey from Army Arabic linguist to entrepreneur and editor. We had so much fun chatting in DC a few weeks ago, and I think you'll find her story just as interesting as I do. Before we get to Jessica, though, a quick reminder to sign up for email news on the Writer Nation Facebook page. And for those in our exclusive Facebook group, please be on the lookout in January for a free gift I'm working on for you all right now. Okay, let's get to Jessica. So she started an editing business a few years ago, and you can see the plethora of authors she works with on her website. But it's her story that to me is really, really fascinating. From being recalled to the Army during the war in the early 2000s, to searching out romance writer veterans in Anaheim and being picked up by complete strangers at the airport, this girl is just a dynamo. So I hope you find some inspiration in her story, because that is why Writer Nation is here, and I hope you enjoy it. So let's do it. All right, girl, I'm really glad that we finally got to do this again.
I am too.
I love doing this podcast, and I love you, so I'm pleased
that
we're here.
I love you too.
So I want to get started with this past year you started, or 2 years ago, you started Jessica Edits.
Jessica Snyder Edits.
Mm-hmm. And so you've been pretty involved in the last years really doing that, and so I'm really excited about that for you, and mm-hmm. I want to hear all about it, especially with our mutual friend, Pippa Grant.
Yes.
But I want to start with where you started getting into writing. Like, where did it start for you?
So I've written my whole life. I remember when I was in middle school, probably, I wrote a story about two girls who went horseback riding in the mountains and drank some river water and ended up back in time. I don't think there was a plot, but a lot of things happened.
That's fun.
I tried to submit probably when I was still in middle school, maybe early high school.
Nice. Did you really?
Yeah, my mom helped me find publishers, and I got a lot of rejection letters.
Outstanding.
So surprising. So I've always enjoyed writing. When I got deeper into the writing community and started to write more and know more about plot and conflict and all of that, I realized I don't want to write anymore.
Oh, really?
It's a lot of work.
It is a lot of work. It's a lot of good work.
So if I have an idea in my head, if I have a scene, I'm more than happy to type it up and write it down and make it all beautiful. Mm-hmm. But I don't care about going beyond that scene.
Ah, okay.
And even if I have a whole story in my head, that's a lot of work and I don't want to do it. So in 2014...
Wait. That's way too far. So let's get back to...
Oh, okay.
So high school.
High school.
Yes. So you graduated high school from where?
Lancaster, Ohio. Central Ohio.
So Ohio. And then what did you do?
Then I joined the Army.
Right. And you were in the Army for how long?
I was in for 4 years. I was an Arabic linguist. I got out in 2000. I got a letter in 2002 that said, come back or go to jail.
So just so people know, that happens.
Yes.
You know, because
yes, it does.
9/11 happened.
Yes.
And so we needed Arabic speakers.
Yep.
Predominantly, right? But what did you do in the Army in that, how many years was it, 4 years?
So 4 years, I was an Arabic linguist. The first 2 years was just training. It was learning Arabic.
Yep.
And then learning kind of the technical aspect of my job. And
so was that hard, like, to learn Arabic?
I'm a language nerd.
Oh, so perfect for you.
So, yeah. In high school, I took Spanish and French at the same time.
Did you really?
I don't recommend doing that. I was in fourth year Spanish and first year French.
No, you weren't. I was a Spanish major, and I walked into a French class, and she's like, I'm like, okay, I can't.
I did well until it came to speaking, and when I would have to speak in French, if I couldn't, like, if it didn't pop right to the top of my head on how I was supposed to pronounce something, then I would pronounce it like Spanish.
Mm-hmm.
And luckily, my French teacher knew I was also in Spanish, so she would just stop me and say, redo it, and I would redo it, and it would be fine.
So were you dreaming in Spanish and French, or
just Spanish?
Yeah, I did too. That's kind of fun when you know your brain is working that way.
Just Spanish.
Okay, so become an Arabic linguist for the Army. So what did you do the second 2 years after training and you'd already learned how to speak?
After training, I went to Kuwait twice. Mm-hmm. We did 4 month deployments, worked with the Kuwaiti Army, taught them. They had a lot of money, and so they would buy all this equipment, but they didn't know how to use it. And so we would go in and teach them how to use it.
Okay, cool.
So I learned really weird Arabic words. Like I could teach them how to use thermal sights on their tanks.
And you learned how to say thermal sights on your tank.
I would know how to explain all that.
That's awesome.
We would teach them how to decontaminate their vehicles and equipment if they were hit by some kind of gas. Mm-hmm. So I knew all those words. Super useful.
I bet it is now, isn't it? Very useful these days.
So yeah, did that for 2 years. Got out. I was out for a little over a year and a half before I got the orders to come back.
So what did you do in the year and a half between the
two? I worked at a hotel and restaurant in Lake Tahoe.
So you moved out.
So I got, I got out of it completely. I was originally from California.
Okay.
So I wanted to go home. I was, I don't know, 10 miles from my dad's house, I think.
So where did you grow up? Or where California?
Everywhere.
Oh, the whole state.
We were all over the place. So I was born in the Bay Area. We lived in Sacramento. I lived in Tahoe for a couple years. My mom moved to Ohio, and so I've spent I think the last 5 years there when I graduated high school.
Okay, got it. So my husband just had his passport stolen out of San Francisco last year.
I saw that. Lots of fun!
Yay! No, but we still love that area. It's beautiful. Yeah, beautiful.
It's nice.
Beautiful area. So you're back at Tahoe working in the hotel.
Yep.
And you get a letter in the mail.
I didn't. I had to ask for it.
Wait, you had to ask for it?
So I was visiting my mom in Ohio, and a friend of mine, I think, sent me an email, and he said, oh my God, I just got orders. I'm supposed to come back in the Army, and we had been stationed together. And he, when he had gotten out, he had a VA rating because he had really, really bad back problems. He had been in a car accident.
Yeah.
And like, he has vertebrae fused together.
And so, the Army's calling him
back? Yeah, and the Army's trying to call him back.
Because he speaks Arabic.
Yes.
Ah, okay.
And so I was like, whoa, that's crazy. You need to find out what's going on. And then I got an email from a second friend I had been stationed with. And she was like, hey, I just got these orders. And I was like,
oh.
My best friend was a recruiter at the time. So I called her and I said, can you find out if I'm coming down on orders?
Yeah.
And she said yes. And so she actually called the Human Resources Command in St. Louis, Missouri to say, hey, is my friend coming down on orders? They faxed her my orders.
Awesome. I remember faxing in 2001,
too. So they faxed her my orders, so I got them. I had 2 weeks before I had to show up at Fort Sill in
Oklahoma. Wait a second. You went and discovered this for yourself.
Yes.
They faxed orders.
We're getting there.
And you have 2 weeks notice.
Yeah, we're getting there. So we have 2 weeks notice. I had to go to Fort Sill, Oklahoma for 2 weeks. Nobody knows what's happening after that.
Well, you know.
We get there, we go through, you know, basic welcome back to the Army. Here's your uniforms. Here's all the paperwork you have to do. The guys that were bringing us back in were all prison guards. They were like National Guard and reservists that had been called back to active duty so that they could process us. There were about
12 of us. I'm like, wait a minute.
I'm all
prison
over the place.
Guards are, prison guards are bringing you back to the Army. But these guys have also been called to active duty because
They're processing the other people who have been called back.
So just so people know, I am a reservist and almost 18 years, believe it or not. But it is not unusual for Guard and Reserve to be called to active duty to help process the active duty to go do stuff wherever that happens to be. So that's actually kind of typical.
Yep.
So the fact that they're prison guards was just interesting.
Well, and I say that because, like, they took us through all the normal, here's your paperwork, here's your uniforms, let's do some really super basic welcome back to the Army training. And then they put us through, like, riot control procedures. And we had, like, we had masks, we had batons, we had the big plexiglass shields.
I don't even know what to say about that. That's
we're
awesome.
All linguists. We're all either Arabic or Persian Farsi linguists going through this, and they're like, what, you've never done this before? No, dudes. If it gets to the point that a linguist needs to have a riot shield and a baton,
we're in trouble.
It's done.
We used to say that about me too. Public affairs, man. If we're having to like draw weapons, we're bad.
It's done. We're done. Super bad. Yeah. So we did that, and then they told us, I think about 3 days prior, oh, by the way, on Saturday, we're going to send you to Goodfellow Air Force Base, mm-hmm. which is where we did our technical training. And oh, by the way, you need to pass your Arabic test again.
Of course.
Even though some of you have been out of the Army for 2 years.
And you've clearly used Arabic sure. in the last
yeah,
2 years.
Not a problem. But they were going to be nice, mm-hmm. and they would let us get one score lower than required on the test.
To come back and be a linguist.
Because they were forcing us to come back and be a linguist.
Got it, okay.
They would let us go one score lower than required.
Just because they needed the linguist.
Right, you called me. If
yeah.
I don't score well, are you going to let me go home?
Right.
No, you're not. So everybody passed, basically, because we had memorized the test at that point. Because there were only four tests that you took.
Yeah.
And every time you took it, the instructor, when we were all in the Army the first time, just taught you the test.
Okay.
So, yeah, we all passed. It was fine. Whatever.
From Goodfellow.
Yes. From Goodfellow Air Force Base, I managed to get orders to Germany.
Mm-hmm.
And I went to Germany for a year and a half.
And what did you do in Germany?
I listened to people's phone calls.
Oh, okay. So you didn't go down...
I didn't deploy. This was before the war even started. So we were in Afghanistan, but it was before Iraq kicked off.
Okay, got it. So where in Iraq were you? Afghanistan were you?
I didn't. I was in Germany.
Oh, you were in Germany, but the unit was in Afghanistan.
Nope.
What?
Nope. No, we were spying on people, like other people's phone calls.
Okay, I'm sorry. Yes. I was a little confused for a minute.
No,
so,
we were spying on people.
Okay, so you were in Germany in 01 when we went to Afghanistan.
02 and 03.
02 and 03.
Yeah.
Okay. And then did you get out then or did you get out later?
I got out in 03.
Okay.
Because I enjoyed being back and mm-hmm. I realized with that 2 year break that I had missed it.
Mm-hmm.
But the Army has infinite wisdom and they said, oh, it's awesome that you're here, but if you want to come back, we need you to get out and then reprocess through as a brand new person coming in through the military entrance processing center, and then you can come back into the Army. And I was like, you can't just like write a letter and say I'm just not leaving, and they said no.
Wow. Well, for anybody who doesn't know the military, I mean, it's a massive bureaucratic red tape machine.
Yes.
And so I'm not surprised
yeah.
by that.
So I got out. So
well, you know, sometimes they just make it harder yeah. than it needs to be.
Exactly.
Okay, so no writing during all this time, I'm assuming, other than in Arabic.
No.
Or reading yeah. Arabic, I guess.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so you get out, and what do you do?
I contracted for about 2 years. Mm-hmm. So I became a site manager for companies that were providing linguists to the military.
Mm-hmm.
So I worked in D.C. I worked in Baghdad. I worked in Kirkuk, which is northern Iraq.
Yep.
Balad, which is kind of middle mm-hmm. Iraq. I went to Afghanistan. I worked at Bagram Air Base.
Mm-hmm.
I jumped around a lot for
yeah.
about 2 years. And then I burned out
because
mm-hmm. I was jumping around a lot.
Hey, going to Iraq and Afghanistan within
yeah.
a two-year period, back-to-back, we'll do that to you.
Yeah. I quit that job, came back to the States, decided I wanted to do something completely different, and mm-hmm. became a reservation agent for a cruise line.
Nice.
In Phoenix, Arizona. There's no ocean there.
No, there isn't, but
so
that sounds fun.
Didn't get super great benefits from that because there's no ocean in Phoenix for me to take a cruise.
So were you booking, like, snowbird people? On cruises or
no, what? It was a call center.
Oh,
so
oh,
anybody
gotcha.
Who
okay,
called
got it,
in,
got it.
We would do their reservations.
Okay.
For
somebody who has had to call in for cruises, I appreciate mm-hmm. that you did.
Oh,
that.
Yeah, you're welcome. You're welcome.
By the way, still haven't taken the cruise.
We'll get you there eventually.
Yeah, one day.
So after that, kind of got bored with that after about a year because there was no, like, I just talked to people about the same cruises over
yeah.
and over and over. And there wasn't a lot of room for growth.
So did you go on any cruises while you were doing
no.
that? No?
No.
And you were not writing at this point?
No.
So still not writing.
Still.
And this is like 2005?
I mean, I still probably had ideas.
Mm-hmm.
I think when I was in Germany, I started my first, like, what would be a full romance novel if I ever finished it.
Okay.
And I probably got, over the next 10 years, got 10, up to about 40,000 words
okay.
done with it. But again, I just didn't have the drive to finish.
Totally understand.
So after a year in Phoenix, I took another contract, went back to Iraq for a year, spent the whole year in northern Iraq, which was relatively safe.
Yeah.
So
up near Kirkuk in that area. Yeah. So people understand, the Kurds actually kind of own that area up in there, and they have made it very, very stable.
Yes.
And I mean, it kind of devolves the last few years, but back then they were pretty well autonomous.
Yeah.
Okay. So you spent the year there.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what were you doing?
Same thing. I was a site manager for linguists that were there supporting the military.
Okay. So you did like logistics and stuff for them, or what is
it? Basically we paid them, made sure that each unit that was based out of the Kirkuk region had the linguists that they need with the skill sets that they needed.
Okay. Got it. Yeah.
We would hire new people as necessary, make sure that they were getting the equipment they needed.
Yeah.
That kind of stuff.
Okay. So a year there, mm-hmm. and then you come back to the States, and what year is it?
It's now 2008.
And what are you doing?
So the year I was there, I wrote a couple short stories, mm-hmm. and I posted them online, and then a magazine actually contacted me and said, hey, we'd love to publish it.
What magazine?
I don't even remember. Did they publish it? I don't know. Are they still a magazine? I don't know. Did
Girl,
they
pay me? We don't know.
Absolutely not.
So you got two short stories posted online, and the magazine calls you, and you're like, I'm going to be published, and I don't know where or who.
Yeah,
or...
I didn't really pay attention.
Okay, so.
Came back. It's 2008. I'm still kind of writing. I'm learning more about Romvets, which are romance writers who are also veterans. I'm part of that group now. I found them online. I'm learning more about Romance Writers of America.
Okay, wait. So Romvets is a, and I'm also a part of that. It's a bunch of, it's a whole bunch of, not just women, because men do write romance as well.
Yes.
But it is a large group of veterans who write romance, and they kind of bounce ideas off each other. And if they're writing about a particular base or camp or whatever, they can network on that side and kind of ask. As a matter of fact, I recall one of the first ones that I was paying attention to, there was a woman writing romance out of Launstall, but she wasn't at Launstall and hadn't been to Launstall.
Right.
And so I was able to actually help her because we were stationed there for 3 years. But that sort of thing happens in that group. And I love that group.
Yeah, it's a good networking group.
It is a good networking group. And the stories are important.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, all stories are important because they affect people in whatever ways they affect people. But I like this particular group because it's telling stories that a lot of people don't know a lot about. So then after you sort of joined Romvets, now you're looking at Romance Writers of America, the largest fiction writers group in the United States for an industry that is over $1 billion annually.
Yes.
I want to make that clear. This is the largest fiction writers group in the United States. And it fights for writers' rights. They do a lot of lobbying Congress to make sure that we're paid appropriately, you know, and that the industry respects the writer more than they respect the editor or the publisher, but that they're treated fairly.
Right.
And that's very important.
The business isn't taking over from kind of the writer's perspective.
Yes.
And so they want to make sure the contracts are legal and fair for writers when it's coming from publishing houses.
And that affects all writers, not just romance writers.
Correct.
Which is what's awesome about it.
Correct.
Okay, so have you joined RWA by this point, 2008,
9? I think so. Maybe?
It's not really
important. I don't remember.
Okay, but...
I don't remember.
So
I'm getting deeper into the industry and learning more about it.
Okay, perfect. What are you learning? Like, do you remember, like, specifically something that went, oh, that's interesting? Because for me, when I learned that romance was a $1 billion industry, I'm like, holy crap, what? And it's actually over $1 billion.
Yeah.
And it's a significant part of the United States GDP.
Yeah.
And I was floored. I mean, I know people read, you know, I just had no idea it was that big of a commodity, frankly.
I think learning how big the community was was probably it for me. Mm-hmm. I started following Smart Bitches Trashy Books at that point, which is an online review. And they were very deep into the community as well. And so authors would go there, readers would go there, they would post reviews, but other articles about stuff. So they were kind of my entree into the community.
Got it. Okay.
Learned about RWA. still thought I wanted to write and still enjoyed short stories mm-hmm. because it was basically just that scene that was in my head that right. I could get out. Figured at some point I would finish that manuscript that was at 40,000 words that had taken me 10 years to get to that point.
Yeah.
It's still at 40,000 words.
Well, you know, if you keep writing these scenes, there might be a thread.
If you just connect them together.
There you go. All right. So now where are you?
So it's 2008. I'm back. I'm working in human resources now. I'm in the States. I'm dating a guy who's still in the Army. And kind of following him around mm-hmm. as he gets moved from duty station to duty station. I'm trying to get deeper into editing or writing or something professionally. Mm-hmm. So I actually, for probably 2 months, I took a job doing like SEO editing, maybe?
So search engine optimization yes. editing, which is important too, because if you don't have the right words, people aren't going to find you on Google or Bing or whatever.
It was a weird job.
It
was super weird. I kind of feel like knowing more about marketing at this point that I was working for like one of those companies that just pumps out content.
Ah.
And so we had I would get an article. I would have a very specific number of times that I would have to make sure that a specific word was in the article. It couldn't be in there more. It couldn't be in there less. And then I was doing, you know, basic proofreading for grammar and punctuation, stuff like that. It was super weird. And I didn't get paid very much, so I only did it like 2 months, then I quit. Kind of a terrible job.
Okay, so terrible job. Then
yep.
what?
Yep. So fast forward, 2013, I think.
Whoa. You're jumping 3 years here.
Because so. I'm not doing that much.
Okay.
Like, I'm still in HR. I dated the guy. We broke up. I'm still in HR. Whatever.
Where are you living in this time?
All over the place.
Okay.
When I got back in 2008, I was in Virginia. Then I moved to New York. Then Missouri. Broke up with the guy.
So I'm gonna guess you were at like Fort Drum.
Yes.
And then Fort Missouri would have been what?
Leonardwood.
Yeah, Leonardwood. Yeah. Yep.
And then broke up with him. Came back to Virginia.
Okay.
So 2012, I went to my first RWA conference.
And where was that?
That was Anaheim. California.
Okay.
And
did you pick to go to that one because it was in Anaheim and you're like, oh, I could go see family? Or are you like, this is cool, let's go see what it's like?
I picked to go to that one because my best friend lived in Long Beach and I
there
wanted
you go.
To
go all right.
get her. And I didn't have to pay for a hotel.
Nice. All right. That makes sense.
Yes. So because of the Rom Vets networking, there were two women who basically picked me up as soon as I got there. I hung out with them the entire time.
And you had not met these women yet. It was all online and you were just, nice.
It was all just email loops.
Yep. So see how you can network?
And yes.
I love it when people have stories about, oh, we met on Twitter and then the next thing you know, we're having coffee
or
we're being picked up at the airport or whatever.
Yep.
All right. So these Rom Vets pick you up.
Yep. I'm taken under their wing. Mm-hmm. And for the whole conference, because it was my first conference, they kind of walked me through. I always had somebody to hang out with. They would introduce me to other people. So it was really nice. While I was there, I won a raffle, I think, to go to breakfast mm-hmm. with editors from Carina Press, which is the digital first for Harlequin.
Okay.
And at that breakfast, I was talking to one editor, Rhonda Merwarth. And I said, you know, I'm interested in editing. I don't really know anything about it, but I'd like to learn more. Mm-hmm. And she said, we don't have any openings right now, but watch Entangled, because sometimes
that was back when they were mm-hmm. just starting.
Yep, sometimes they'll have openings for interns. Mm-hmm. So that was 2012. In February of 2013, I just happened to get onto Twitter, mm-hmm. which I didn't use very often. And the first tweet I saw was from one of the senior editors at Entangled looking for an intern.
It's so serendipitous.
It is. It's fate.
It is fate. Yes. That's fabulous.
So I sent a message to her. We went back and forth.
So wait, this is in February of
2013.
Mm-hmm. I'm trying to remember when we moved here, because we moved to D.C., I want to say in the summer of 13.
That would make sense.
Yeah, because when did you go to your first Washington Romance Writers meeting?
It would have been 12, 13 somewhere. Because I moved back in September of 2012.
Yeah, so it was about a year later when I went to my first one, and that's where we met. And I remember you saying, oh, I was in the Army. And I'm like, oh, cool, I'm in the Air Force. And it just goes from there. But, yeah, so Washington Romance Writers is one of the largest chapters of Romance Writers of America. And it's, I think, 200-something members these days. So I really like that group because it has a lot of craft workshops. You know, because I don't write a lot of heavy romance at all. Nobody would be shocked to hear that about me. And I like going to Mystery Writers of America because they bring in, like, the subject matter experts from, like, Baltimore Police Department or, you know, cool things like that. But they don't do a lot of craft.
Right. And genre fiction craft is generally the same across the board.
Right. And so it's been really blessing for me to be able to sit through those kind of workshops and stuff. So, all right. So you are now editing for Entangled.
So I'm an intern.
An intern.
At Entangled. I'm not paid, but I work with a senior editor. She's super awesome. She gives me lots of really good feedback on manuscripts that we're working on, what she's looking for, what the company is looking for.
And this is how you're kind of learning how to be an editor.
Yep.
Proofreader kind of.
Yep.
Okay. So I remember we were in the car going to Bestseller's house up in, you know, wherever, I can't remember where she lives, but we were in the car with Mary Karen Meredith and you were editing her book or helping her with her contract or what she had just signed with Entangled. And you guys were working through her first platform building, I guess, or whatever it was. She was very excited because she talked for a solid hour and a half about...
That's what she does.
Well, because it was exciting, right? She signed with Entangled. It was her first... I know it wasn't her first agent, but she signed...
She signed in 2014.
Yeah. Yep. And I remember this conversation. We were driving down the back roads, and you guys were talking about this for... I was driving, I remember. You guys were talking about this for an hour and a half. But what I learned, though, was much more about Entangled than I ever knew before. Mm-hmm. Because it is digital first... And they had put out Cindy Madson's books, too, who I know from Colorado.
Yep.
And I remember seeing her book in Barnes & Noble, and they had it, like, I didn't like the way they put it on the shelf, so I turned it this way so everybody could see the cover. I'm like, that's my friend, you know. And I remember Mary Karen was very excited, and it was, you know, you had just started there, so she was kind of learning because she just started there. And you guys were learning how the whole business worked, not just the editing, proofreading. I mean, that's just putting out the product. The business side of it.
Yep.
And Liz Pelletier is extremely smart businesswoman when it comes to this sort of stuff. So I think that's, and I assume that you think that's a really good foundation for you and where you are.
It was an amazing experience. Yep. And I got to work with several editors. So I got to see lots of different editing styles. I got to learn a lot about the business. Liz is very agile when it comes to business. And so she's willing to take risks. She's willing to ask questions and try something new and see if it works. And if it doesn't, then she'll pivot and do something else. And if it does, then she's, you know, going to leverage that.
In the ever-changing business that we work in, I think that's really important quality to have.
So it was really good. I was with Entangled from 2013 to 2017. So I was with them for 4 years.
But in 2016, you decided to start doing, freelancing.
Yep.
So start talking about that. How does that start and what does that look like?
So I think some of the local Washington Romance Writers people knew what I was doing for Entangled, that I was proofreading for them. I was doing the first three passes, which is kind of story structure, and then digging deeper into word choice and then, you know, basic technical grammar stuff. So one of the local writers, Jamie Farrell, recommended me to Maria Gerasi, who she knew from a Florida chapter. And Maria contacted me and asked me if I would copy edit her book. And I said, sure, I would love to. And it grew from there.
So that's how it took off.
Yep.
How long does it take you to copy edit a book? Let's say the book is 80,000 words.
It depends. Depends on how clean the writer is. And it depends on how fast the pace of the book is. So I will generally give myself 2 weeks to do it. And then what I try to do is with each author, I'll time myself so I know how many words per hour I can do on average with that author. So going forward, if I continue to work with them, I know if I can adjust the schedule or not.
So that's interesting. You time yourself.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. So I give myself 2 weeks. I'm usually done before that.
Okay.
But
It's good expectation management.
Yes. I'm also still working full-time, so the only time I'm editing is at night and on weekends.
So, wait, you're working full-time as you do this. Now, what do you do?
I'm still in HR and recruiting.
Okay.
I've been doing that
That's
for
That's paying
10
the
years.
Bills, and yes. then this is more of your passion kind of project. So, have you heard of slash careers?
No.
So, this was a term I heard when we lived here in D.C. It's called slash careers. So, I'm a lawyer slash musician. You know, okay. A doctor slash writer or whatever. So I think in our world, like, I'm a public affairs officer slash writer.
Right.
You know, so you're an HR executive slash editor.
So what I'm focused on now careers. Is digital nomads.
Now explain that.
So that's my long-term goal, to be location independent, because as an editor, clearly I work for myself. All I need is an internet connection.
Yep.
I want to be able to literally travel the world and just take my laptop and maybe the dog with me and become a quote-unquote digital nomad.
I like that. I've never heard that term, digital nomad.
Yep.
I travel all over the daggum place, and I always bring my laptop, and I'm like, oh, of course I'm going to write. I'm going to write while I'm there, and I never do. And I've got to really work on that, too, because I love traveling, and I love writing. Mm-hmm. So my problem is I'll just write when I get back from traveling. So I'm like, all right.
And I have taken work with me on vacation a couple times.
Yeah.
And I'm taking the vacation not because I need to completely, you know, decompress and unplug. I'm taking it because I want to go somewhere interesting.
Well, yeah, that's why I travel, too. Yeah. It's not necessarily I need to be on the beach with a Mai Tai. Exactly. You know, it's because I want to see cool stuff and eat cool food and meet cool people. And
So I'm happy to take my computer with me.
Yeah.
And I can get work done while I'm there. And it's not a big deal.
Okay, so let's go with, I know that you have worked with a new author who's come out this past year, Pippa Grant.
Yes.
And so I'd like for you to kind of walk us through, what does that mean when you start with a new writer? And let's back up. Pippa does not need a developmental editor. We talked about that earlier.
Correct.
Because she's kind of pretty solid with her writing style. So if you have a new author, like brand new, never published anything, how do you help them with a developmental edit? Like, explain what that means to people.
So the developmental edit looks at the structure of the story and make sure that the structure makes sense, the pacing is correct, you have goals, motivations, and conflicts for your characters, you have good characterization. We're not digging into anything specific in the story at that point. It's overall, it's a macro edit for the story itself.
So it's basically you're looking at the plot to make sure it makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Is that kind of what I'm...
Yep. So if anything's missing...
Got it.
If anything... is being focused on too much, and we need to take some of it out.
So balance of that plot as well.
Yes.
So, okay.
Yep.
Okay, so then let's move on to Pippa.
Mm-hmm.
So she's a new client.
Mm-hmm.
She's a really good writer, so you don't have to worry about like developmental edits. So now what do you do?
So with her, and she's the only author that I do this with, she writes, she'll send it to me, she'll send me the manuscript, I'll do a copy edit. Send it back
explain
to
everybody exactly what that means.
So the copy edit is more of the technical grammar, looking for misspellings, looking for sentences that don't necessarily make sense.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times the author will have an idea in their head, but when they type it out, it doesn't translate well.
It's like, I know what I'm talking about,
exactly.
But I haven't really quite explained it to you very well. Okay, got it.
So that new pair of eyes reads over it and can say, I don't understand what you mean here.
Okay.
Of
course he's hot. We know he's hot. I know he's hot. Don't
exactly.
you know he's hot? Well, he doesn't sound all that hot.
I do look for sentence flow. If something's really choppy, if something doesn't make sense, if words are repeated too often, phrases are repeated, even the structure of the sentence, if it repeats too often, too closely, then it kind of sounds repetitious to a reader.
Yeah.
So that's the copy edit. I send it back to her. She makes the changes.
And she's pretty quick with her changes.
And she's fast, yeah. Or she accepts the changes that I already made in the manuscript.
And just leaves it.
Mm-hmm. It's a Word document. And then she sends it back to me and I do a
second
read.
That takes an incredible relationship for her to just be like, okay, accept all, let's move on.
She doesn't accept all. She goes through them all.
Oh, okay, got it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Either
way, it's still an incredible relationship for me. Like, yeah, you know, 95% of the time I'm taking all this stuff.
Yeah, exactly. And then I'll do a final proofread, which is just the same going through it again one more time to make sure there aren't any other mistakes.
So in the final proofread, though, now we're looking at punctuation, grammar, you know, all those little...
I'll do that in the copy edit also,
but
it's just anything that I would have missed.
Okay,
in
got
the copy
it.
Edit.
Okay, and then what does she do?
She publishes.
So she takes it from there and...
She will use a program called Vellum to format it.
Vellum is typically Mac only.
It's Mac only. usually if you have a PC, the way to use it is to find a virtual machine, and you can go online and basically find a Mac server that you can use to be able to use it.
That sounds incredibly technical.
It's odd, yeah. Just find somebody who has a Mac and use Vellum with that.
V-E-L-L-U-M.
Yes.
Vellum.
Yep.
All right, so I'll put that in the show notes. We were talking about that yesterday. Mm-hmm. We're actually in town because of the WRW annual meeting. Mm-hmm. And yesterday, Eliza Knight gave us a really, I thought it was an incredible talk on the business of writing. And she also recommends Vellum. And not to push all the formatters out of the way, but what she's basically saying is you could do it yourself in 5 minutes as opposed to paying somebody $500 to do this for you. Those of us like me, though, who work on a Dell are pretty well screwed. unless we find this Mac server thing, which I'm an English major, so don't even know what you're saying.
If you need to format, let me know. We'll get it done.
All right. Yes. So I would like to put out 3 books by the end of the year. I'll be happy to send those to you.
Yep, not a problem.
Okay. So she formats herself and then
she works with a cover artist and a PR person to do her covers and the teasers. Those are like what you'll see in advertising on Facebook. It's usually a picture that somehow relates to the book. Sometimes there's a picture of the cover on the teaser and then like a quote from the book.
So what's the last book you worked on with her?
Hot Air.
Is that out yet?
It just released maybe 10 days ago. I think it released on August 31st.
Okay, so Hot Air by Pippa Grant is the latest by Jessica Snyder edits, and we will all want to go out and get that one.
And it's Air, H-E-I-R, because he is the heir
to
a
kingdom. Oh, he's the heir to...
And there are hot air balloons in the book, so it all plays in together.
So how many of her books have you worked on with her?
All of them. 7, 8?
She said 7 out in a year?
Yeah.
That is outstanding.
Yeah.
So Pippa Grant, let's go check out the new author there. And so what are you working on now? Like, what's in the hopper?
A lot. I have
go through every single one of them. Now, just tell us kind of an idea of what
copy edit that I'm working on. So, like, today, I have a copy edit that I'm working on. I have to do that on the computer because I'm looking for grammar and I'm making changes. I also have an author who finished her revisions that I gave her for the developmental edit, and I told her to send it back to me because I want to go over the changes she made. Mm-hmm. So what she did was she made all the changes, like she accepted my changes in the manuscript using track changes, and then she put in her new ones, her revisions, and so if I looked at it on the computer, I could just tell Word to go from, you know, the next revision to the next revision. And I could just see what she had typed in. But what I did was I forwarded it to my Kindle, and my Kindle Fire will read it to me. So on the drive up here, which is about 35 miles, it read to me on the drive. And then on the drive back, I'll have it read to me. And then I know that I'll be driving a little bit this week. So I'll just have it on audio, basically, on my drive.
You do this for the last pass. Is that what you're saying? Like, for this one, it's the last pass or a second pass? Or
This one's kind of... It's just a follow-up to make sure, because she still had questions about how she implemented what I recommended. So I told her, just send it back to me, and I'll listen to it on audio.
Now, how do you find that that's different than reading it? What do you notice is different?
I definitely have less really specific attention than I'm paying to the book, but I can do it while I'm driving. So it's saving time. It's not time that I have to be sitting down and reading.
But so I would imagine it's more of a, I mean, if you're listening to it, then it's more of a how does the story flow kind of pass as opposed to the commas out of place.
Yeah, definitely. So basically, I just want to make sure that she was really working on motivation and characterization. Mm-hmm. So I just need to get the story in my head, however it gets in there, to make sure that those points were fixed.
Okay.
Basically in this pass.
Okay, so that's what you're doing today. And if anybody wants to come work with you, how do they get a hold of you?
My website is jessicasnyderedits.com.
Okay, I'll make sure to put that in the show notes.
I have a Facebook page also, which is facebook.com/JessicaSnyderEdits.
I'll make sure to put that in the show notes. So, okay, so beyond that, what is your, like, goal for the year? Like, what are you looking at for the year?
Over the next year, like by next September, I want to at least maintain my current work schedule. Mm-hmm. So I don't want to do fewer books over the next year than I have this year. I'm almost at max capacity, so I don't know that I can take on too many more, mm-hmm. simply because I'm still doing it part-time.
Right.
I want to focus more on not just editing, but other things that I can offer, like consulting. I do videos on my Facebook page. If I can set up kind of better videos, eventually parlay that into training mm-hmm. options, I would like to do that. I would like to do more conferences.
Do you have one specific this year you're going to go to other than, are you doing RWA?
I think I'll do RWA. I'm going to submit to do a workshop.
Okay.
And so I would like to do workshops at conferences mm-hmm. where I'm giving the workshop.
Sure.
So I'll probably propose to a couple local groups and see if they're interested. And I'm working on building Instagram. I don't really know how Instagram works. It confuses me. Like, I know technically you put up
okay,
a
I'm
picture.
Like, okay, Snapchat confuses me, right? My 17-year-old daughter is yes. about to give me a tutorial on Snapchat. Instagram,
no.
you know.
Put up a picture.
Right?
Hashtag. No, more like the strategy behind it.
Sure, sure.
Using it as a business without having a business account.
Right.
Because I don't think I want to do that. So... working on that. Still figuring out how it could work.
Well, from an edits perspective, I understand what you're saying.
Well, not even editing, but more on the location independence and,
oh, sure. yep.
and entrepreneur standpoint.
Yep.
What I can do with it.
So there's a Twitter group that I used to plug into every Monday nights, and I think it was called Monday Women's Biz or something mm-hmm. like that, and they would, for an hour, talk about entrepreneur, and they were all different businesses, mm-hmm. you know, but they would talk about how you would do things like Instagram for your business.
Nice.
Or how you would do, like building web pages for a business and that sort of, it's not digital engagement, you yeah. know, but something maybe that you would be interested in. It's like Monday night 8 and you just jump on and their hashtag is right there. And now that I'm talking about it, I will put it in the show notes as well.
Cool. Thank you.
So we can all kind of look at it. But I really found it to be valuable
nice.
Because regardless of the business aspect or the business product
right.
the aspects of the business were very similar
right.
because everybody has to know how to market and how to you know sell products and this sort of mm-hmm. stuff, and marketing is very different from communications, which is very different from selling mm-hmm. you know, and if you've never done that before, like I've been in the military a long time, and so selling stuff is not really my forte. Now I can market the heck out of an issue
right.
you know, and that's very different too. So what I enjoyed about this group is that they really helped you understand how to use those platforms to sell a product. And in our business, that product is us,
right?
Right? It's not the book. It's the author writing the book because you're building that relationship with the reader. And as the editor, you are also building a relationship with a writer mm-hmm. and the reader because they want it. I mean, you know, people know Simon & Schuster, right?
Right.
They're not writing books. They're pushing books. There's a difference. So anyway, I just think that was a really good tool for me to learn some more aspects without going out and getting an MBA, which I'm never going to do. So,
oh, look it up.
Yeah, I will. So I will put it on the show notes for you.
Okay,
and
cool.
Was there anything else that you want to chit-chat about today?
Not really.
No, you're good?
I'm glad you came to visit.
I'm glad I came to visit, too. I'm glad we got to do this because
yeah.
it's been a year, and I just hate doing podcasts on Skype. So I'm like, look, I'll be there. We'll just do it in person. So then when I come back next year, we'll do it again and see
okay.
where your business is and
perfect.
See what you're doing. And so, all right, everybody, check out Jessica Snyder Edits, and I'll put that in the show notes. And thanks for being on the show.
Thank you.
Today.
It was fun.
And I'm going to stop this thing.
This is Writer Nation.